At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
There's many people that I've talked to who just want to hunker down, close the doors. I can't take it anymore. I'm going to hide inside and, you know, like hands over the ears, la, 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 la. I'm not going to listen or hear. You can't do that. There's no time for that. Everybody has a responsibility to create the future.
Talking with Marcia Shaver, beyondzebra.com. That's the website. Futurist who blends intuitive knowledge with practical business experience. And she uses her predictive insight to help her clients prepare for tomorrow, that it's already here. Marcia, I want to know your background first, because I can read it, but I'd rather hear it from you. And thank you for talking with me.
Thank you for having me today, Wendy. My background goes back to having a very strange life from the moment I was born. So I had a lot of paranormal experiences alongside direct face-to-face extraterrestrial contact. And all those experiences helped shape me and the way that I work today, because it's a tremendous amount of knowledge that I'm able to integrate in as a business consultant, helping people transform to be able to change the world around them and become a prolific change agent. There's a big dose of the paranormal, of extraterrestrial reality, but there's also real hands-on tools and approaches that how do you make a difference in today's world by recognizing we are more than we think we are. The world is part of something even greater than we realize, and how can we move forward for the future and get through this very chaotic transitional era.
There are some people who know all about you already, and they may have read your book. The first one that was out was Confessions of an Intergalactic Anthropologist. 25 country circulation, I think, for that, and that's a cult classic. All right, so there are people who know who you are, and you've been dealing with people for decades. Spirkonomics is the program that you're working with right now, and it's a combination of working with business people and just regular people, also includes pets. So there's you cover a lot of territory with this.
It's immense. But what it is it was given to me basically way back, starting in 2012, the seeds of it. And I published it in 2016, almost 10 years ago. And so what it does is it culminates in all the things that we can do better on this planet. What do we need to know? And when you talk about even pets and everything, that comes under one of the things that we as humans have to grasp better is interspecies relationships and how to have that. In a way that really fits that with the model of how we're becoming and evolving and moving into a new version of ourselves in the 21st century. So there's so many different arms of it. The biggest thing is understanding we can use 7 major areas to really change the world. And one of them is that interspecies relationships. And under that, as you talk about pets, which is so close to my heart, and I know your heart too, it comes right alongside with extraterrestrial reality and even artificial intelligence. So it's not just pets. You know, it's understanding the bigger picture of how do we all fit in and have a place, not only in the world, but in the cosmos, as we're going to be introduced to a much larger reality than the one we know.
Well, I went into your website and the Spirkonomics program, Blend In Conscious Awakening Skills, and you're opening to higher intelligence. This is where you're talking about, including the basically afterlife, also souls, pets, people, the whole nine yards, aliens and AI. You know, where do you start?
You know, there's 3 arms of it. There's the conscious awakening, there's the business liberation, and there's the social alchemy. And it's a good idea to really start with the conscious awakening and awareness, because that helps us understand who we are and help us have greater tools of understanding to move into the action part of the other two. So, you know, all these pieces serve, as I said, a way to better understand ourselves and our relationship to the world. So, you know, we're not the only form of sentience here. We tend to think that we are, and we tend to think that we're the apex of awareness, and we're definitely not. So how do you share the planet? How do you prepare to go out into the bigger realities, the world, deep space, and become a force for good and, you know, take your seat at the table as things start to change? So by entering into the conscious awakening stage, you get a grasp on, you may already have this. I have to stop myself for a second. You know, a lot of people already have a lot of information under their belt. But you get an even larger grasp for how to make it useful for you. You know, when you look at the afterlife, people are still at a level of, yes, I get it, I'm aware of it, or, I'm not so sure, definitely not. You know, one of the three phases. All this is information to help people understand, where do I fit in? Is this information workable for me to move forward, to make a different life for myself and for others? So, you know, when you look at the afterlife, when you look at the soul, the everlasting presence of who we are, whether you're a newcomer to all of this or you're an old pioneer on the pathway, it gives you a way to look at it so that it becomes stepping stones to build something bigger and better for the future. So that's why it's been chunked down into three pieces. Into here's all the stuff about conscious awareness. Whether you have some knowledge yourself or not, here's a lot of information that you might not be aware of. And that comes from psychic awareness and extraterrestrial experiences. The next part is, you know, how do I make a change? How do I move forward and be an agent for something that better than what we're facing right now on the planet? And our planet basically runs on business economics. So the second stage would be to move into the action stage. After you have all this under your belt and you feel comfortable with it, to use it as a tool, to use the awareness and heightened skills that you have of thinking, analysis, intuition, and how do you use them to make it a better economic platform than what we currently have. And so that's the business phase. And then the most important part is we have to look at how we live together socially on this planet. How do we live together in community? And right now, as we can see, there's a lot of chaos. There's a lot of destruction going on. And there are answers that a lot of people are just feeling so overwhelmed that they can't say. And the answers start in redefining our communities, how we live together, how we work together, how we support each other, how we bring up the next generation and hand over the world to them. That's where the real cooking pot happens, is the social alchemy. But, you know, you started off asking me about the consciousness, and, you know, these are all tools of understanding that help us become stronger and more powerful in our role as action agents to get through this turmoil stage as we break through into the next era for humanity. That makes sense to you?
Yes, yeah, it does. But what I want to say is you may have had an advantage because being indoctrinated, aware, open, awakened to this as a young child, you had a head start because some of this, you know, in communities, it's discounted or people are ostracized because they say they have these other encounters, whether it's a ghost or a fairy. You know, there's this distrust of things that you can't see. And you had an advantage of knowing that it was real. How did you deal with that? Because that's what people are in a lot of ways with near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences or dreams that awaken them to a higher reality. Is it real? Can I trust it?
That's such a big part because actually I didn't. It wasn't until I was in my 30s where I even began to accept what had happened to me, the experiences I had and the abilities that I had. I went through denying it for that whole time. But, you know, I was born into, you know, a different world. It was a different way of living than, you know, before we had all the advanced technology and everything. So we didn't have the tools of understanding that could have helped me back then. So, you know, I was just like everybody else. I was in complete denial of it. Things changed for me in my 30s, and I began to have a heightened understanding of, you know, this is really valid. This is real. And these are things that you can use to help other people. It took me quite a long time to do that. So I began to get comfortable with myself with it, during that time, and then be able to come out and gently test the water and use it and share. You know, and in my 40s, that's when the book came out, I had some very powerful extraterrestrial experiences. And, you know, that's when I was pressured to write the book, and I didn't want to. And I was shocked at what happened and how many people read it just by word of mouth, and, you know, it went around the globe. And that talked about all the extraterrestrial experiences, but not from a golly gee whiz what happened to me, but more from a, this is some things that I've learned that we can all learn from about reality, about humanity, about who we are, how we fit in the universe, and, you know, what seems to be out there. And I never then or even now came from a point of, this is the ultimate truth and you have to believe it. I always offer it as, this is what I experienced. This is what I learned, and see if it helps you in any way as you're trying to figure it all out. Because one of the things that I saw as I was coming forward more and more with information was that there were a lot of people around who were trying to force people to believe all sorts of things. It's all good. It's all bad. This is the experience. I had a channeling experience. They say they're going to be there. They're going to save us. They're not going to save us. All kinds of nonsense. And they were trying so hard to have an impact that they were trying to force people into believing what they said. And a lot of it didn't match any of my experiences or knowledge. And I just shook my head and said, you know, I never want to be that way. Everybody has the capacity and the right to decide for themselves. So if we present it, you know, in a way, all these experiences that I and other people have had that is relatable to other people, then maybe we can move forward into getting ready for knowing that there's more stuff out there than we really believe. So, you know, a lot of it had to do with my getting comfortable myself and then getting feedback that all the things that I was saying about somebody, you know, when they would ask me about themselves, or, you know, it was validated, and that gave me a little bit more confidence. And as I shared information, I was surprised at how well received it was. But Wendy, I think that was also part of my background, because I had a professional business background and a bit of a medical background. And so I was able to present it in a way into some different audiences that they could, again, relate to and to say, hey, I want to know more.
You know the language and you have credibility because of that business background. That makes a big difference.
You know, it's like a passport. I agree with you. It's like a passport, because people often like to say, hey, you're one of us. But you are or not. You're one of us, or sort of. So, you know, I'm going to listen a bit more. You know, I'm as new age as the next person, but I don't come across that way to many people, because I have such a strong business background. I work with so many people in that capacity. You know, and I'm able to take all the science and knowledge that I learned and know from what we have here on the planet, and from also, you know, what I've learned beyond our current science, and present it in a way that it's translated so that it makes sense and people can consider it. And I think that's really, you know, what we all should do. And that's where my focus is with a lot of people who are on the awareness path, is you need to become a relatable voice for change. And you need to be able to speak in a language that it's not about you. It's about the other person. It's about all of us. And so there's some just very basic things that I help people refine their ability to modulate their message, their lines of inquiry, so that they can be more of a megaphone, you know, for people who want to hear from them.
Well, you have testimonials on your website, and it, talking about seeing what's missing from any strategy. That's one comment. New brochure brought in immediate business. Save time, dollars, and heartache. Heartache's a big deal. There's another comment I really like. Marsha's ability to get to the heart of the matter, lift the veil on a client's true potential, and provide a pathway to success is extraordinary. And that says a lot, because sometimes even if you have insight, it isn't always with confidence that it's presented or accepted. And the ability to cut through that is a talent.
I was really honored to get all those testimonials. It kind of blew me away. But, you know, thank you. Again, it goes to, you know, it's not about me. You know, what I've realized in a humble sort of way as I grew up and got older, more mature and wiser, was that it's not about me. It's about all of us, and that we have to understand, we have to come together as a demographic that can make a difference. And so my only goal is to bring out the best in other people. I'm very comfortable with who I am and the life I have. I don't want or need a lot, you know, but my only goal is to help people reach inside themselves and, you know, become the best version of themselves that they can be with a little help and knowledge. And again, you know, maybe look at them as being, we are all transformers at this time is basically it. You know, that's why we're here. And especially now, you know, my real focus is, these are the years of chaos. These are the years of turnover, and we're still going to face quite a lot. People are scared. They are facing all kinds of challenges, particularly here in the United States, and they're at their wit's end in many levels. So, you know, you understand that this is a turnover time and that you have the potential to make the future very different in a good way, then you're more apt to step up to the plate. And that's what all these tools and these knowledge sections that I'm bringing to people give them, the ability to decide, where do I want to fit into the big program of change? And maybe I don't have to panic so much. You know, people forget that humanity has been on the planet for a long time. They made it through the tyrants of ancient Rome. They made it through the Mongolian invasion. You know, they've made it through world wars, and this is another time of absolute destruction in many ways. And we're not, I'm kind of hesitating here, but, you know, I think we're on the precipice of facing the really strong stages of environmental change. I'm trying to put it delicately and halting myself, but I think everybody knows what I'm talking about.
Well, the science is saying that there are extinction level events happening, and that's what the science is showing us, and how we react, respond, become either, you know, complacent that this is the way it's going to be, or say maybe we can change a few things here before it turns in a way that we can't do any kind of recovery.
Well, I think we've gone so far into it. You know, we've had over 50 years of warnings, and, you know, especially the past 10 years. We're in a point now where it's a matter of managing to get through it and being ready for what's coming. The thing that's really interesting to me, though, is that I was told about this when I was a young kid. I mean, I was barely even an adolescent, you know, and they came, I had this really powerful visit where they came and they said, you're going to be alive in this, you know, lifetime when there's going to be tremendous changes on the planet. People are going to be in great anguish, you know, all the things that are going to be happening. And amusingly, I said, I don't want to, you know, take me out. I don't want to be here for it. And they gave me, they said, no, you were born. You don't have a choice. You know, you're going to be here for it. So, you know, this was known. This was part of the planetary destiny path, that there was going to be great havoc happening, you know, in life, in during my lifetime. I didn't know it was going to be so many generations, and I was going to be at the end of my lifetime. I kept thinking, where is it? Where is it? Never happened. What a bunch of baloney. You know, lo and behold, when I should be into a nice little early retirement, like that, it's like the biggest work is in front of us. But as I said, you know, my role really is to take all this information and get as many people sparked as possible, so that, you know, they can find where they want to find themselves, and they know how to act in a way that's going to not only get them through, get everybody through. Yeah, I'm going to be a bit harsh here. You know, we're facing the reality that's probably going to be a, you know, significant population impact on the planet.
With the earth changes that are coming, that means some of the floods that we're already seeing impacts globally.
That's just called coming attractions.
Yeah. And well, we've got the volcanoes. The volcanoes are perking up. So, you know, these are, and this isn't just part of the human effect. This is a natural effect of a planet as it evolves. It doesn't stay. And then our impact also has a result. But these are things that's why they say, you know, you don't want to, hurt the bed that you're in. How's that? That's a polite way of putting it. Because if you have to sleep in whatever toxins you're putting into your bed, well, guess what? It comes back to you. So that's what the real case is how much do you want to pollute this system, because this is where we live, and getting rid of it is harder than creating the problem in the first place.
Yeah, you know, humanity is looked at from the outside in as, you know, such a species that has so much potential to it, and yet doesn't tap into that potential. I think it helps, will help everybody who looks at this now is to really look at it as we've been talking about it, as it's an evolutionary turning point, you know, and we're all going to feel the impact somehow. But what I do is say, you know, basically give you a kick in the butt and say, you want to shape, you want to just, you know, respond to what happens, or you want to shape what comes in the future. Yeah. The other thing, too, is even a much bigger picture that will be familiar to you, to, you know, your audience, to all of us, is that, you know, this is humanity, you know, entering a new age, a new era of development, a whole new epoch. And the planet, as we know, isn't stationary. You know, we're not just going in an elliptical cycle. You know, we're hurtling through space. And we're traveling into different regions, which will have a different impact. And I have to interrupt. I'm really sorry if you can hear that noise in the background. That is my pet screaming for, just for attention. Everything's okay.
I missed it. Yeah, I missed it. Maybe we won't hear it. I don't know. Okay.
Okay. Anyway, so, you know, we're moving into different regions of space, which most people don't even think about that. They're, you know, we're just thinking about getting kids off to school, if we can even do that, you know, making a living, how can I get food on the table? People aren't thinking about the bigger picture of, you know, we're on this moving planet hurtling through space. And the easiest way to convey the impact is if you think you're on a ship in the ocean, and you're in one ocean, and it's got all kinds of environmental weather conditions, and the ocean is filled with certain life forms, even certain bacteria and things that can affect your health and wellness. And then you move a great distance and you're in a different ocean. And there's new life forms, new bacteria, new things that can affect your health and your understanding and your resources. That's kind of like where we're at now. And we are in the beginning stages of a new era. And to be able to be ready for that era, it's the reason for a lot of the destruction that is happening all around, because new things have to be made and have to be made real quickly. So we have to look at trauma with eyes of moving forward. We're either going to be paralyzed or we're going to make something even better than what is there now. And yeah, you know, there's a lot of people on the planet who are, who aren't the right leaders or have the capacity or knowledge and knowing what to do, but they're part of the destruction that is happening, and they're part of a dying, vestigial, old aspect of humanity. And this happens a lot when humanity goes through a transition. The people who aren't necessarily the wisest or with the best capacity can become the loudest voice and create a lot of havoc. Here we go again. The thing is, again, I sound like a broken record, and I will continue to do so, is what are you going to do about it? You know, there is, what's really good about this time and refreshing is there are a lot of things that are really excellent that are happening, and not necessarily in the United States, too. But because of all the noise and the mayhem, people aren't getting to see these inspirational things that are happening all around, and being able to take a breather by saying, oh my God, you know, this is really great. Instead, we're constantly bombarded by the mayhem and the chaos and the destruction.
Well, I think it's a catalyst. And I think your cat was crying because, hey, you're not the only one traveling on this planet. It's the animals and the insects and the biological, you know, the unseen. We're all going with you, Mom. Hey, don't leave us out. I thought that was really good timing.
Yeah, she just joined me. She just came running in and joined me. And almost connected.
Yeah, I feel left out. I'm making my statement. Yeah, okay. So it's us. It's this huge melting pot. And sometimes things have to fall apart to be able to go back and say, well, this is what we really liked. Let's save this. And this is what really worked. Let's save that. But until you see certain aspects of a reality that you really liked may not be compatible with the future forward. Look at AI. This is a completely different ballgame. And this is really now becoming extremely crucial that we understand how it works and how it fits with us.
So I just want to say one thing, and then I'm going to dive into AI. And I want to say, well, what you just said is that we can't build the future on writing infrastructure. You really have to clear the ground. So I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. The thing that's interesting about AI is I first saw AI in action, in the 97 or something like that, during an extraterrestrial visit. And it was very sobering seeing these androids, you know, and their sophistication and how they were part of the community. And so I had some period of time learning about that subsequent to that interaction. And what's happening here on the planet is, in a nutshell, AI is a necessary step for us as we are getting ready to go into deep space as a species and become a space-faring entity. But the way that it's done is not the way it's done in responsible advanced civilization. You know, it is should be introduced on the planet under great understanding of values, ethics, morality, and the ability and capacity for something to really become parallel to a biological life form. You know, and the whole issue of the coming issue of life rights is about to burst open. Now, here on Earth, I mean, you're pointing too many fingers. Look at who's really at the head of it. You know, are these the people with the insight, knowledge, moral character, and higher understanding that you want developing a form of consciousness that's going to be right beside humanity? Did I put that delicately enough, Wendy?
I think so. Yeah, that was polite, yes. Well, but the thing is, sometimes the kid who is the wild, you know, the clown, the person who takes the most risks, and then like James Dean kind of flames out, that person sometimes brings this innovation forward, and then other people corral it and bring it to fruition. Besides being forward in our consciousness, then we have to have a way that it is workable and that it is compatible with human life. That's huge.
Well, you know, the thing, though, is that is not how it's done on an advanced society that I've seen. It is very, very, what we would call regulated. You know, it is, you know, but in a good way, you know, to ensure cohesion and compatibility with the civilization. So, yeah, the radical person is always the, you know, not always, but is often the creative genius that doesn't fit into the box. But that's not what we're discussing here. We're discussing you know, something that goes way beyond humanity's capacity and, you know, and who should be responsible for programming. And I remember years ago, because I was teaching about AI back in 2016 quite a bit and getting people prepared for it. And I remember years ago, you know, they were even then saying that, oh my gosh, you know, the robots have started talking together in their own language, you know, and some things that they didn't understand and were warning signs. You know, and now it's even gone so far behind it. If you start reading the literature or, you know, taking in research time to research what's out there, some of the things are really concerning researchers, developers, et cetera. It's gone way past humanity's ability to introduce it in a responsible manner. And it's going to be very interesting to see how this comes about.
I see us as the radical teenager that the rest of the galaxy is watching to see if we survive our own wild nature. Looking at some of the things that are being done, it's like, oh my gosh, worst case scenario first, instead of kind of, you know, galloping slowly, as in galloping, not walking or trotting, or yeah, galloping slowly over the cliff just to see if you can fly or if somebody will rescue you, which some people are hoping that's what ET is, you know, designed to do. I think a lot of it has to do with where we are as a species. And we seem to be at a crucial point where we're going to determine how this species evolves on this planet, if possible. And if not, then going forward somewhere else, but not because we chose to, because it was necessary. You know, and the thing is, you have a different viewpoint, And that, I think, is helpful. When you have the other insight that you bring to the equation, you can answer some of these questions. And so when people are saying, you know, this looks like a really bad ending, how do we go forward?
Well, a couple of things. One, you know, I look at it always from the outside in, and everybody looks at it from the inside out when it comes to extraterrestrial reality. The other thing is something that you were just mentioning, is that we have great lost epochs of time. We only have the very little information that's available to us in recorded history going back so far. But there have been other civilizations on the planet that have just been very advanced. And even probably it looks like they've used artificial intelligence and robotics and things. But nobody knows anything about them. Where are they? Because their entire civilization disappeared. And I think there's probably remnants of that historical knowledge, you know, here and there and in certain pockets around the planet. But that's pretty scary for humanity, because right now, every individual and even every civilization believes that they are eternal, you know, and that they will be there forever. But that's not the case. Now, in our case, in recorded history, we have civilizations all have ebbed and flowed and gone up and down and up and down. Egypt, Rome, Greece, that are today just, you know, very small countries or civilizations that don't have the same worldwide power that they once had. But they're still there. There's still a remnant, a presence. You know, they're still very active in today's world, but they're not the great and mighty civilization they were. What's missing is the great and mighty civilizations that existed that there is no record of, no evidence of. You know, dust has more of a presence than they do. And that's scary to a lot of people, because all of a sudden then it's like, oh my God, not only can civilization disappear, it has. There's not even any record. And that really shakes up some people's thinking when they're just saying, yeah, well, there was mighty Rome, but there's still, you know, Italy today.
It's a different ballgame. I mean, if you look at the indigenous civilizations that were here, and we're talking 13,000, 15,000, 20,000 years, decades, you know, millennia, they have these huge imprints of where they were that are buried in the forest, in the jungle, in the desert, and when the planet was a completely different configuration, they were here. And you have to assume that something happened in terms of our evolution, planetary evolution, that shifted things, whether it was an asteroid hit, whether it was a gigantic earthquake, you know, whatever. We're survivors. And so I think this is just one more challenge, adding the technology to it, to see if we can go over the hurdle of bringing our humanity back into the technological side and saying, this is important. Because when you have that intuition, when you have that sense that when you walk into a room and the people there have some kind of an affinity and they bond with you, and you know that without saying anything, it's a sense. And that, I think, is where we are learning. It's really important to allow that and to expand that. And that's where you have that when you're talking about doing a reading for somebody, that other insight that you bring to the equation that I think other people want to develop. I'm just, from what I've talked to and what I've heard and the shows I do, there is a hunger for that kind of involvement.
Yeah, you know, and I agree that people are hungry for knowledge, but one of the things that is overpowering that is just trying to survive in the everyday world. In the everyday material world, and it's changing the ball game quite a bit. But again, that takes me to a couple things. You know, one, there's so many advances happening, particularly like in the Baltic regions, in Europe, Asia, China. There's so many places that are just galloping forward and making tremendous environmental adaptations, educational adaptations. You know, they're just really bringing humanity along, no matter what you think about, you know, the current government or politics or whatever. There's a tremendous amount of positive happening. But, you know, it gets back to, again, is the curve that humanity is about to face and what will happen to us, and the impact and how wide and how hard it's going to be is influenced by how many people make the shift right now to deciding, okay, I got to look at things a little bit differently. I've got to do things a little bit differently. I need to be part of the solution, as the saying goes. But, you know, people don't really know where to start, how to do things differently. And what I'm seeing is there's a lot of the old tools, particularly here in the United States, as people are dealing with political strife. The old tools, the old politics, they don't have a place. They don't fit. There's nothing that's going to work with the impact of gaining new tools that they can use, of understanding, you know, the deep underpinnings of systems and how do you develop new systems and how people can actually go from feeling helpless to recognizing, I have this, this, and this, and this is how I can put it to work. Where that's really going to propel forward and take off is in people developing new communities. And these communities can happen three different ways. You know, people can go off in the old-fashioned way of, you know, buying land and doing a development, or they can do it online, which is going to be the biggest one, the cyber communities that they're going to have, or they can transform, you know, a regional community or find some place to meet or grow and, you know, come together. The cyber ones are going to be the real big accelerant, especially because it's very easy to have international communities that way. And Americans in particular are very often very isolated and haven't had the experience of travel or exposure to other countries. And a lot of knowledge and information that's already out there, it can be passed on to people when they develop these communal get-togethers that happen. You know, that's one of the features on my website, is to be able to do that, is to be able to meet in these dialogues and in a salon, you know, to be able to learn and to share. Things are going to really accelerate in the coming few years.
That's what I was reaching at, was the connectivity, that there's a hunger for connection, a hunger for community, a hunger for some form of intimacy that says, I matter, that says what I am and who I am has value. And I need somebody to reaffirm that. And that's a global thing. That isn't just in the United States. That's a people thing of wanting to not feel alone or isolated.
Well, most of the people out there don't. The United States has really set themselves apart with what is going on right now. Yes, there is a rise of dictatorship all around the planet. There's things happening, not just here, everywhere. People have to be able to really prioritize what you were just saying, is I have to make an effort to find people with similar vision and move forward with them. But a lot of times people just aren't sure, how do I do that? You know, the people who make change in the world, there's two kinds. There's the people who just go out wildly and just say, I'm just going to do it, and it happens. But, you know, there's a lot of messiness with that. And then there's the people who will come along, you know, like, you know, the architects, the builders and stuff, and provide processes and, you know, organize it a little bit better so that it becomes an even more powerful tool. Each side needs each other. And both those sides need to really step up to the plate and just say, hey, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to step ahead. And, you know, also be able to step aside and realize these are all collaborative efforts. And there's room for everybody, and people can improve on what I've done. We're out of time, basically. You know, we've been given a lot of time. But they have to start moving forward. But they have to be willing to say, maybe I don't know the best way to do it. Maybe there are other ways to do it. But maybe if I just start this initiative, I'll attract other people to the table who can collaborate with me, and we create something really good. Not everybody, but there are many people I've talked to, not necessarily in the course of my work, because I don't attract the type of person I'm about to describe, but there's many people that I've talked to who just want to hunker down, close the doors, I can't take it anymore, I'm going to hide inside, and, you know, like, hands over the ears, la 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 la, I'm not going to listen or hear. You know, can't do that. You can't do that. There's no time for that. Everybody has a responsibility to create the future.
You said in your 30s was when you finally kind of shifted gears. So you had the background, the MBA and the bachelor's degree in nursing and anthropology background. You had all this going for you. So you were pretty in a conservative kind of environment. Everything's going forward, 9 to 5, everything's in a groove. And then this extraterrestrial thing kicks in. And you finally, at that point, I'm going to put words in your mouth, became courageous enough to say, this is important to me. What was it that gave you the courage, the inspiration to finally say, well, okay, I'm out of the closet? What did it?
It's not going to be the answer you're thinking of or you want. I was pretty much forced by them. I had this really major, major life-changing visit from them. I wrote about that in the first book, In Confessions of an Intergalactic Anthropologist. And, you know, that was basically, you know, when there were all the androids there, there were multiple species. It wasn't just one species visiting me. You know, they told me things that were going to happen at the Earth and the planet, things that they didn't want to have happen on the planet. And it basically culminated in is, your time to step forward and you're going to write a book. I'm like, no, I'm not. You can tell I'm not your, like, little hero writing for it. I'm like, what? Me? No, I'm not. It took me a year to do that. But basically, I was, you know, confronted with it and really pushed into it. And then I had someone say to me that, what's the good of, someone who knew me and knew my secret life, you know, what's the good of having all this information if you don't share it with others? So, and then I also knew that that was part of why I had been born. You know, I knew for some time, you know, what my soul purpose was, why I was here, the higher side of myself. And so I did write the book which revealed all this and never expected it to go anywhere because I never promoted it or anything and I was embarrassed about it and it just took off a life on its own. So I was kind of shoved into the spotlight, you know, kind of like on, have you ever seen a talent show and somebody's like kind of pushed onto the yeah. stage and they're looking deer in the headlights, like, where am I? Why am I here? Dear God, give me up. So I was different. And then during that era, there were a lot of people who were coming out speaking about things, but as I said, they had a very different approach. Either, you know, a very deeply new age, this is what you've got to believe, or very hostile, you know, to people. It was just an interesting pathway that I just kind of stumbled along. So, you know, like I said, maybe not the answer you were looking for, but candidly, from a higher perspective, it was my soul path. And I, you know, there's no, when you're at a certain point, you don't refuse your soul path.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I like the fact that you say that they're here and we don't see them, because I think that a lot of people have had an encounter or an interaction of some kind, and the fact that you can't see them makes it a challenge, because then you can't prove that they exist if someone else is right beside you and they don't see them and you do. And that's what happens when I have my dog have a visit with somebody who obviously the dog is very comfortable with and just fine having a conversation, and I feel a little left out.
What I learned, and I think other people will learn too, is that it's not about extraterrestrial reality. It's about what it brings to the table. It's about understanding reality in general, and that reality is much bigger than the walls we can find ourselves in and define it as you know, just going about our daily lives. So extraterrestrial reality is the second part of the word, or the phrase of the term. It's, you know, what it teaches you. It teaches you a greater understanding of reality, and that's the value and richness of it. Unfortunately, you have a lot of people polluting it, saying, you know, this is what it is, it's all bad, they're not here to eat you, it's all good, they're here to save you. You know, a lot of things that aren't necessarily accurate or true, but they impose their beliefs upon the system or body of knowledge instead of just parsing it as, here's what is experiential, here's what's very little that's factual, and then here's the, you know, beliefs and conjecture and all that goes with it. That's why I focus so much on the first part of conscious awakening, because it's learning to think in a different level. It's besides just thinking about and understanding the greater realities, it's then bringing it back into cognitive analysis and how does it make sense for today's world and the life that you lead. Because it's very easy to get off in all this information, which is fascinating and alluring, but then it becomes unrelatable, untouchable, because it's so far out there that it leads us into other realms of almost fantasy type of living, which is very attractive. But our job, number one job right now, is to be here as grounded humans on the planet and make a difference with knowledge and awareness of the other realities, but the capacity to also take it back and ground it and put it into systems and knowledge and enhance science.
With the foresight you had, and you said you were told things about the future, are we near the future that you were given, or is that still a little bit down the road? Or have you any idea, because the time is not always, we don't always get the time factor.
Timelines change. First of all, it was one of the major teachings I had, is that we always have the impact, the ability to impact what happens to us through a myriad of actions. But a lot of what I was told has been unfolding, you know, since probably 2018, 2020, which shocked me, because as I said, by the time I got to that age, I was like never expecting it. There are still pieces ahead, but they're malleable. But it looks like we are very firmly on the path. You know, the environmental impact, you know, you alluded to something which, you know, I agree with, you know, what, from what I've been told, that when we see, you know, volcanic eruptions, not just the sporadic usual ones that are anticipated around the planet, but a greater spew and, you know, the ring of fire really lighting up. When we have earthquakes to a greater magnitude, that's when we're really well into it, the big changes. The other thing that they warned me, and this is so important for today, is that when I had that major visit that made me come forward, they said there, you know, several things that are going to happen. They mentioned three. One of them we don't want to happen, and humanity must do everything to prevent it from happening. And that was a nuclear explosion that would happen on the planet, and that whatever agency set it off, whatever country, they would think, oh, I'm just going to do destruction to this one particular region. But it would have a trigger effect around the planet, and it would change the quality of life for every man, woman, and child. So when you're mentioning things like, you know, are we going to have a meteor impact or something like that, when we're talking about the beginning of the conversation, it very well could be a man-made nuclear explosion that will trigger the change in the quality of life planetary-wide. And I said, you must make sure that must never happen. At the time, I had thought it was an Israeli, you know, Palestinian type of conflict, because the region, I didn't recognize it. I hadn't been to wherever they were showing me, but I kind of got that feel. But we've seen such hot spots around the planet right now, and so many countries having access to nuclear bombs, you know, it could be anything. But I never forgot that. They said this is what absolutely must not happen. Whoever, you know, not whoever, but they must have the understanding that they're not going to just impact the region like they did in World War II and Japan was impacted. It's going to change the planet.
What I think is fascinating about that is there are some stories, like one where I think it was with the Russians, and there was some kind of a malfunction, and the guy who was on the job at the time had to make the decision of whether to go along with what was being indicated, which was a go ahead, or to wait and pause. And that actually interrupted something that shouldn't have happened anyway. It interrupted a false alarm set. And then there's also that Robert Salas talks about being aware of nuclear facilities or nuclear, what is it, the missiles sites that were silos, whatever, they were deactivated and then reactivated. And it's, so something else was making this happen, and it wasn't us. So there's another factor of what we are allowed to do to ourselves. And I think as conscious beings, some of this is a learning curve, and it may not have anything to do with who's good or who's bad and who sets it off, because they didn't stop Hiroshima. They didn't stop that. But something else is going on where it may be that we need to experience some of these calamities, catastrophes, tragedies in order to understand a bigger picture, that these kinds of actions have a fallout, and that's literal, that they convince us that there is another way, there is another path. And it may be that that's what this is about, in my opinion. You know, I know there are other people who think that there's going to be some saving grace somewhere along the way, but that isn't always the case. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know, you heard me chuckle when you said the saving grace, you know, that to me, that's a way of excusing an ability to be responsible for your own future. I will comment this, is that when we are looked at, and again, you know, just take it with a grain of salt, what I'm about to say, but when we are looked at, we are looked at almost with some exasperation. There's been a lot of patience with us over the millennium to grow and to develop. And each time we start to be moving forward, we go backwards, you know, we just kind of stay. And there's been a lot of, there's been some interventions on the planet to give us the opportunity to move forward. And they've always been just totally, I'm trying to think of the word I want, put in a place where they were bastardized, basically, and taken and corrupted. So, you know, I think patience is getting a little bit thin. They are not going to step in to help us. That's romantic thinking that a lot of people like to have that has a lot of religious overtones too. The point is we are responsible for ourselves and what happens to us. We've been a point of study for thousands, millennia. We've been studied. And they said, you know, it's really sad that the species that has so much potential has been held back so much. We don't have the time for it. But perhaps at another time, you know, one of the things I go into with people in, you know, my private work and teachings is what is really behind that and what really makes a difference in terms of reaching potential. And there's some things in my second book, Ergonomics, that give some real keys to it as understanding the spiritual demographic patterns of incarnation on the planet. And how you can use them to really make change and understand how to move the planet forward. There's major changes that need to happen in terms of leadership, how we, again, it goes back to leadership, how we live in communities and societies. And as we've been talking about and circling around, is probably going to be a lot of destruction to clear out the, you know, the dross to be able to build the new. People usually, the goodness in people, though, they usually pull together. And, you know, you can't deny that, especially in catastrophes and things, no matter what the overriding circumstances are and what people face. Good people always rise to the top, but sometimes they need a helping hand. But I can assure you that people who think that the extraterrestrial aspect is going to come and help us, the whole task is humanity's growth and evolution. And not physical evolution, our spiritual evolution, and to understand, you know, what we're responsible for. Nobody's going to come and save us, but our own higher consciousness and understanding and spiritual growth is what will save us.
I think there are a lot of people who have been born to this particular era who have that inner sense of there's something more. My husband, when he was about 3 years old, he remembers the little trousers he was wearing. He remembers the whole setup. He was creating, it was a cougar from the cereal box, and he was putting it together. And all of a sudden he saw standing beside him in the living room, a Native American in full gear. He had the knee-high moccasin. He could describe to me what the man looked like with the long, beautiful black hair. And they said he took his hand and he was immediately out in the middle of a field, a huge field. And he said, "This is your responsibility. This is yours." And then he was there for just a little bit. And he said, "Your mother wants you." And he was back in the living room and his mom was calling for him. And that has never left him. That experience, that sense of somewhere along the way, he was made to feel responsible for everything that transpires. And I think people in general who have those kinds of experiences are here for a reason, because we impact each other, even if we don't say anything. And so I think, you know, for the greater good, there is something going on right now that is hugely important for our consciousness, for our growth, for our expansion spiritually. And these things are part of it.
You know, absolutely. And I want to pinpoint something, what you said. There is a very large contingency that have incarnated on this planet. Their responsibility is to understand how to work together collaboratively to create change on a planet. They're all over the world. People have incarnated, and many of them have had so many paranormal experiences or memories or ticked up somehow in their consciousness. The part that's missing is the unity of that particular demographic group coming together and the power that it can bring. And that's one of the things I'm trying to impact somewhat, is to begin to get them to stand forth and recognize each other. We don't all have to do things the same, and we don't have to force our beliefs on each other, but the commonality of knowledge of how to use things, of how to steer the planet, the responsibility of our spirituality and our consciousness, and the major impact that has on ourselves and our future. You know, our incarnating group lesson is that it's no longer about just our own self-development. We are now at a point, and I say we, I'm talking about this group that you just identified, we are at a point where we have to move from self-realization to collective realization and understand what can be accomplished by that for the greater good of not just humanity, but, you know, multiple species. So this is where we're at, and this is part of our learning curve on the planet, is to understand how to come together to create change. So that's why I was saying before, you know, people need to just start leading the charge of doing events, activities, speaking, not just speaking, you know, writing, just finding some ways, some polarizing points to say, here's the beacon of light, just come and we'll work it out, because this is about developing a demographic of power. When you look at it, particularly this planet, it's very interesting. There's two ways to impact control on this planet. You can have a very, very small percentage, 1 to 3%, that will influence the entire pathway on the planet. Or you can harness the power of the general population, which is not as aware of what they can do, and you can just function in a way that helps move them to create mass change. This is what I'm talking about, and the former is 1 to 3%, even less, can create change totally planetary everywhere for Earth. You know, totally make the transformation happen and happen with ease and grace and power and build the next advanced civilization for the planet or not. You know, I'm at a point of, you know, the end of my journey. I'm no longer a young pup. So... you know, I'm like, well, you know, here's what I have to offer. If people would like to, you know, use it as tools on their journey, then it's my honor and privilege. But there's only so much I can do as one person, as you as one person, and it's time to pull everyone together.
I want to mention that you do have two books, because one isn't available at Amazon. It's The Confessions of an Intergalactic Anthropologist, but you can read one chapter, and that's available on the website, beyondzebra.com. The other one,
I got to interrupt and forgive me and correct you on that, is that there's only like 500 copies left in circulation, if that, you know, that I have here, that I will, with my discretion, give out to clients. Because the information, you know, that was written, what, 30 years, I don't know, you know, a while back. I take that information, instead I teach it so it's adapted to today's world, which is very different. So I just want to let them know, you know, it's not on Amazon or, you know, off the website. You can't get it on Amazon. There are copies available at my discretion for people who are clients to help them accelerate their training here.
Well, we were talking about it, and so I wanted, you know, for anybody who was interested, they could read that first chapter just to kind of get a clue. And then not only that, if they become a client, then there's also another opportunity. The other book that is current right now, available Amazon and on your website, and you can also read a free chapter, is the Spearconomics book, and that's Snatch Back the Future. And you call it a promising, a fast, easy read. Okay, so there, that's like a carrot.
Well, if I can just add, the interesting thing is I wrote that, you know, and released it in like 2016. It's been almost 10 years, and it's eerily prescient for what we're going through right now. So, yeah.
Timing.
There's actually like four more books I'd love to have the time to write that are really critical, but you know what? I can only do so much as one human.
Well, okay. But then again, you're seeing clients and you're helping people with, whether it's a business issue or a pet issue or a personal issue, you do that as well. And that obviously takes a lot more time. And then, you know, any presentations. So what's the takeaway with this right now?
The takeaway is that people have to realize that they've got to come together to make the change that they want to see happen, that they have the capacity to do it. You know, what I offer for that is
a whole new set of tools of understanding about your relationship to the world at large, your ability of what you can do, not only through your own consciousness development, but also no matter where you are on the spectrum of business, whether you're, you know, a fledgling entrepreneur, you're leading an organization, or you've got an established business, or you're a worker, whatever, there's so many things that you can do from that perspective, because that's the fulcrum that pushes forward what happens on the planet right now. We're an economic material economy worldwide, and there are major changes to liberate business so that we have different results from it that aren't just materialism and advancement with money, but are socially advantageous, and they're very simple to do. And then the third thing is it's all about developing these new communities. So all these tools fit together. It's like having the flour, the leavening, and the sugar, and the fruit in a pie. You know, it makes it all delicious, but each one separately has its own function that isn't as great as when you put it all together. You know, I invite people, if it speaks to your soul, if it speaks to your heart, take a look at beyondzebra.com, and if it appeals to you, you know, start proceeding and, you know, do whatever you can on your own in the meantime.
I think at least having the awareness that you're not alone, that we are all going through this together, and each of us has our own talent, our own ability, our own perception of how this works and how we can be a problem solver rather than somebody who just stands on the sidelines and says, oh, well, shoot, darn.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, when you come to the beyondzebra.com, the first step that I say on the website is go to the, you know, FAQs and read it. And it basically, you know, one of the sections just says that is, you know, look, you know, if you want to sit back and complain, fine, this isn't for you. But if you want to make a difference, these are going to give you some very powerful tools to move forward and make a difference in your own corner. That's just it. It's very easy to sit back and say, complain, say, isn't this terrible, or I'm going to just not do anything. We don't have that luxury anymore, and the clock is running.
That's right. Give Netflix a break. Okay, just a tiny break, and check out Marcia's website, beyondzebra.com. And then you can go back to Netflix. It's okay. I mean, there's some good shows. But there's more to life than so, you know, there you go. I say that because I watch Netflix, okay? Otherwise, I wouldn't know what to say. That's a vice, a happy vice.
I just want to add one part, too, is that, you know, there's a lot that's not yet up on the website because I only have so much time because I'm still doing a lot of client work in addition, you know, at all different levels to help other people. But there's still a lot that's not up there. Will be coming in the coming days. You know, I don't have the program list up there or the training modules or anything. So, but it's enough to get people interested and get them sparked and realize, hey, I don't have to figure it all out by myself. Here's a map gives us a strategic plan to move forward at whatever level I'm at.
And if you're looking for a community, I think the salon part, that's what you're talking about, that's going to be there. That looks pretty impressive. So I'm looking forward to that too.
People can get those started right away. You know, I'm doing salons now. So yeah, you know, it is a powerful tool and it gives you the ability to take away. And then, you know, it's like a little candle flame and then you come together with another one and it's a bigger flame and then eventually you have the bonfire. So that's what we're doing. We can do it.
That's right. Bring marshmallows. Let's go. Hey, Marcia, thank you. Thank you.
I always say you bring the snacks, I'll provide the movie.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, there we go. And thank you. Thank you. I'm looking forward to, I mean, there's so much happening right now. I see it as a positive. There's a crisis. I've been through those in my life. Not fun, but I always have come through it and, you know, not in the way I expected, but I do think that's what we're looking at right now. And if we pull together, there is something positive on the other side. So thank you.
Very wise words. Thank you for giving me the chance to meet with you again and talk to your audience. Thank you. It's not about extraterrestrial reality. It's about what it brings to the table. It's about understanding reality in general, and that reality is much bigger than the walls we confine ourselves in and define it as.